All right, let's dive in. Today, we're talking about transforming your garden.
Making it a paradise for, well, everyone.
Not just for us, right? But for all the amazing wildlife out there.
Exactly. Think buzzing bees, beautiful butterflies, maybe even a family of birds making their home.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
And to guide us, we're turning to a pretty cool website. It's called Tuinieri voor Mensen Dieren.
It's Flemish.
Yeah, straight from Belgium. It means gardening for humans and animals.
Created by a guy named Michael Van Doren, he's got some awesome ideas.
We're focusing on two of his step-by-step guides today. C1, which is all about creating a sown flower border.
And C2, which is the planted flower border. Different approaches, but both aimed at making your garden a wildlife hotspot.
Exactly. So if you've got kids who love exploring nature, or if you just want your garden to be bursting with life, this deep dive is for you.
These guides, C1 and C2, they're all about helping you create a flower border that's not just pretty to look at, but also a haven for local animals.
And they actually share a lot of similarities, right?
They do. One thing that really stood out to me is that they both emphasize using nutrient-poor soil.
Now, that might sound a bit strange at first.
Right, you'd think plants need all the nutrients they can get.
Exactly. But these guys explain that nutrient-rich soil can actually lead to more weeds.
Those pesky things. Nobody wants to be constantly battling weeds.
And native plants, the ones that naturally belong in our local ecosystem, they actually prefer a less rich soil.
Exactly. They've adapted to thrive in those conditions.
So by using nutrient-poor soil, we're encouraging those native plants and, in turn, attracting the insects and animals that rely on them.
It's all about working with nature, not against it.
Plus, less need for fertilizers and constant weeding. That's a win-win for busy families.
Absolutely. Now, when it comes to location, both C1 and C2 are pretty flexible.
They don't need full sun all day.
Nope. They can thrive in areas with full sun to partial shade.
That's great news for those of us with gardens that have a bit of both.
Exactly. And here's another exciting thing. Both guides say we could have flowers blooming almost all year round.
Oh, wow. Imagine that, a constant burst of color no matter the season.
It would be like a living, changing piece of art.
Absolutely. Now let's talk maintenance. I always feel like gardening can be so time-consuming.
But these guides actually advocate for a pretty low-effort approach.
Really? That sounds too good to be true.
Both C1 and C2 recommend weeding until the border fills in nicely, cutting back the plants in July, leaving them untouched from August to March, and removing fallen leaves. Plus, they recommend adding those early spring bulbs like crocuses and
I
snowdrops.
love those. They're like the first sign of spring.
Exactly. And they provide much-needed nectar for the bees and other pollinators just waking up.
Speaking of bees, let's dive into what sets these two guides apart.
Sounds good to me.
So C1, the sown flower border, seems to be all about letting nature take the lead.
It is. C1 focuses on sowing seeds directly into the soil.
So it's a bit more of a wild, natural look.
Exactly. You're basically scattering wildflower seeds and letting them grow where they choose.
It's like embracing a bit of controlled chaos in your garden.
In a good way. That kind of environment is actually perfect for pollinators. They love diverse and slightly messy spaces.
Makes sense. It's mimicking their natural habitat.
And C1 actually gives you two options for sowing your seeds. You can create distinct clouds of different plant species.
Kind of like creating little patches of different flowers.
Yeah, it's not only visually appealing, but it also creates little neighborhoods for different pollinators, attracting a wider variety. The other option is using a pre-mixed seed blend.
I bet that's easier for beginners.
Definitely. It takes some of the guesswork out.
So C1, it's all about letting nature guide the show. What about C2, the planted flower border?
C2 takes a more deliberate approach. You're choosing specific plants and placing them strategically.
So it's more about design and planning.
Exactly. It's like creating a garden that reflects your personal style.
That sounds fun.
It is. And C2 has this really interesting tip. It recommends planting three times the usual number of plants per square meter.
Wow, that's a lot of plants. Why is that?
Well, it's a clever way to outcompete weeds and create a really full, lush border quickly.
So a little more work up front, but less weeding in the long run.
That's the idea. But with so many plants, it's crucial to choose wisely. C2 stresses buying plants from reputable sources that specialize in native and organic varieties.
Right, so they're healthy and well-suited to our local environment.
Exactly. And speaking of the environment, let's talk about how these flower borders can benefit all sorts of creatures.
I'm excited to hear about that. It's not just about pretty flowers, right? It's about creating a whole ecosystem.
Absolutely. And we'll dive into that fascinating world in the next part of our deep dive. Picture this, a butterfly, wings painted with vibrant colors, landing gracefully on a flower, or a bumblebee buzzing happily from blossom to blossom. That's the kind of scene we're talking about creating in your garden.
It's really heartwarming to think about turning our gardens into these little sanctuaries. So let's get specific. What kind of animals can we expect to see if we follow these guides?
Well, the stars of the show are definitely the pollinators. Bees, butterflies, hoverflies, all crucial for a healthy ecosystem, and both C1 and C2 are designed to attract a whole bunch of them.
I can already imagine clouds of butterflies flitting around the flowers. Do the guides mention any specific plants that are particularly good for attracting them?
They do. One they recommend is Leucanthemum vulgare. You might know it as the oxeye daisy.
Oh, I love those. They're so cheerful. Like little suns. And yeah. Easy to grow, right?
Yeah, they're pretty tough. Can handle different conditions. Another good one is Cichorium intibus, or chicory. It's got these gorgeous blue flowers that pollinators just can't resist.
I've seen those growing wild. They're so pretty.
Right. And here's a fun fact for you. Chicory is a favorite food for caterpillars, especially the ones that turn into painted lady butterflies.
Ah, so you're not just feeding the butterflies. You're giving their babies a meal, too. It's like a little butterfly nursery.
Exactly. And if you want to attract even more butterflies and moths, both guides recommend Verbascum nigrum, the dark mullein.
Those tall ones with the spiky flowers.
Yeah. It's a host plant for the mullein moth caterpillar.
So it's all about offering different food sources and habitats, making sure there's something for everyone.
Exactly. And for a splash of color, both guides recommend Achillea millefolium, yarrow. It comes in all sorts of shades, yellows, reds, even pinks.
Oh, I love yarrow. It's got such a delicate texture. And doesn't it have medicinal properties too?
You're right. It's been used in traditional medicine for ages. So it's beautiful, good for wildlife, and potentially good for us too.
That's amazing. A real triple threat. And of course, we can't forget those early spring bulbs, crocuses and snowdrops.
They're essential for the pollinators that are just waking up after winter.
Now, both guides are really clear about buying plants from reputable sources that specialize in native and organic varieties. Why is that so important?
There are a couple of reasons. First, native plants are adapted to our climate. They know how to thrive here. Second, organic plants haven't been treated with pesticides, which can be really harmful to beneficial insects.
So it's about creating a healthy and sustainable environment. For everyone.
Exactly. Now, remember those two different approaches to creating a flower border. C1, the sown flower border, it's all about that wilder, natural look.
Like a mini wildflower meadow.
Exactly. And the guide gives you all the steps. How to prepare the soil, scatter the seeds, and care for the border as it grows. It even tells you how to create a false seed bed to prevent the seeds from washing away.
That's a neat trick. And I remember C1 also recommends adding those annual and biennial seeds for those quick bursts of color in the first year.
Right. You get to enjoy the blooms while the slower-growing perennials are getting established. Now, C2, the planted flower border, it's more deliberate.
It's about designing a garden that reflects your own style.
Yeah. You're choosing specific plants and arranging them in a more structured way. The guide emphasizes understanding each plant's needs, making sure they have enough space to grow.
And I remember that C2 recommends planting 3 times the usual number of plants per square meter.
That's right. To crowd out those weeds and create a really dense, lush border faster might seem like a lot of work at first, but it could save you time on weeding later.
Makes sense. Now, what about other tips that both guides emphasize?
Well, both recommend incorporating those early spring bulbs, the crocuses and snowdrops, and both stress avoiding fertilizers and pesticides.
Those chemicals can really mess things up, right?
They can. It's about letting nature do its thing. The guides also encourage leaving fallen leaves in the border during winter. They provide shelter for insects.
It's a reminder that our gardens are part of something bigger. They're little ecosystems.
They are. And speaking of ecosystems, let's talk about some of the other amazing creatures that might be attracted to your garden. We've talked about pollinators, but there are so many others.
Like ladybugs. They're great for keeping aphids under control.
They are. And you might also see hoverflies. Their larvae are aphid-eating machines.
Nature's pest control. I love it. And what about birds? I bet we could attract some beautiful songbirds.
Definitely. A dense flower border is perfect for nesting and hiding from predators. They'll love searching for insects and seeds among the flowers. And depending on where you live and what you plant, you might even get hummingbirds.
Oh, wow. That would be incredible. Now, what about other creatures, like hedgehogs or toads? Would they benefit from these types of gardens?
Absolutely. These gardens provide shelter and food for all sorts of creatures, big and small. It's really amazing how planting a flower border can create such a diverse and interconnected ecosystem.
It really shows how even small actions can make a big difference. By creating these little havens in our gardens, we're helping the whole ecosystem.
And in a world facing so many environmental challenges, that's something to be proud of.
Absolutely. Now, as our listeners are imagining all these amazing creatures in their gardens, I have a question for them. What are some of the animals you'd love to attract to your own garden? And what steps are you thinking about taking to make it a welcoming place for them? Think about that as we move into our final thoughts and some helpful resources. So I hope everyone's feeling inspired to get out there and start creating their own little wildlife havens. We've talked about two different approaches to building a flower border, one that's not just beautiful, but also benefits the environment.
And it's important to remember, this isn't just about aesthetics.
Right.
It's about recognizing that our gardens are part of something much larger.
They're connected to the whole ecosystem.
Exactly. So where do we even begin?
Well, I guess the first step is deciding which approach speaks to you. Do you want to go with the wilder, more free-flowing style of the stone flower border, C1?
Or maybe the planted flower border, C2, with its more structured and design-focused approach. Both guides offer a ton of information, step-by-step instructions, plant recommendations. It's all there.
And don't forget, Tunier Vor Mens en Dyer, the website we've been exploring, it's packed with even more resources.
It's not just about these two guides. There's a whole world of information on native plants, sustainable gardening techniques, attracting wildlife.
Right.
They even have a section dedicated to gardening with kids, activities, tips, all sorts of fun stuff to get the whole family involved.
Because let's face it, gardening is so much more rewarding when you can share it with others.
Absolutely. I remember when I first started gardening with my kids, they were fascinated by everything. The ladybugs, the worms, even the spiders.
It's amazing how those little things can spark such a sense of wonder.
It really is. It's about nurturing that connection to nature.
Helping them appreciate all the amazing life that's right outside their door.
Exactly. And you know, as a final thought, it might be worth researching native plants that are especially beneficial for wildlife in your specific region.
That's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Because what works in one place might not be the best choice for another.
Right. By choosing plants native to your area, you're really supporting your local ecosystem.
Creating a little haven for the plants and animals that belong there.
It's about fostering that sense of place, that connection to where you live.
Absolutely. Well, as we wrap up this deep dive, we want to encourage everyone to check out Tunier Vor Mens en Dyer. Explore Michael Van Doren's guides and embark on your own flower-powered adventure.
Exactly. Whether you decide to create a wildflower meadow or a carefully planned border, you're doing more than just gardening.
You're building an ecosystem, a haven for wildlife, a legacy of beauty and wonder for future generations.
So get out there, get your hands dirty, and happy gardening, everyone.
We can't wait to hear all about the amazing creatures you attract to your backyards.